And what is my duty, or what should I be doing in this world? Very practical questions. That it is all right that all is one, there is no differentiation. When the scriptures, the sages, they have that vision in mind that all is one without second reality. But when we hear this, try to understand this, these questions then come that what is this world around me then, and who am I, and what should I be thinking as my duty, what is the purpose of this life, and so forth. So all these questions are very beautifully discussed in this chapter. The technical words that are used here, that is, we saw that what is Brahma and what is Swabhava. And this Adhyatma, what is Adhyatma and what is Adhiyajna? The answers are given by Lord are Aksharam Brahma Paramam Swabhavo Adhyatma Uchate, the third verse. That and Bhuta Bhavo Dhuvakaro Visargaha Karma Samadnitaha. That this Aksharam Brahma Paramam, that the Brahman, the unchanging reality that we perceive as a background. We are not directly aware of it. It doesn't spring up in our cognition. What we cognize, what we become aware of, is something that is continuously changing. But behind that, there is that feeling of unchanging, permanent, without which even this changing perceptions could not be sustained. We have discussed this a few times here, that our perception of change inevitably calls for the perception of something that does not change, on the background of which this change is being seen. The examples like the changing pictures in the movie are on the background of an unchanging screen. So all these changes that we see, they are on the basis of something that does not change. And that which does not change gives the identity to that thing. That is how we identify that this is the same person, this is the same being. I am talking through the same microphone that I spoke today on Tuesday. So is that same? What I was perceiving is going on changing every moment. And yet what constitutes the sameness? What constitutes the sameness? I am seeing the same Triveni that I saw some time back. And then, yes, the changes are taking place continuously, but what constitutes thatness? Just think of it. And we always, unconsciously, we are seeing that, holding on to that, without being able to specify what it is. So that, Lord says, is Brahma, Akshara. And therefore it is automatically permanent also, because the change leads to ultimately destruction or vanishing of a thing. Like we see a person is born, is going through various changes, and ultimately those changes conclude in what we call death. Similarly with everything that we see, like there was the wood. From wood these chairs have been made. Then the chairs, already there are complaints for last so many years that these chairs are kind of rickety, they have lived their life. And so we see that they were not like that when they were new, maybe some 75 years ago. I don't know exactly when they were bought, but they have so some repairs and all that went on into that. It is like the body, when we try to propel it through medicines and repairs and surgeries. Many of these chairs have undergone quite invasive surgeries, let me tell you. So, it is. And they are surviving. But how long the changes are taking place? Someday it will not be seen in the form of the chair. It will be again the pieces of wood scattered here and there, disintegrate into something. So, it will not be then called chair. So the birth of chair, the existence of chair, vanishing of chair, all is taking place. That is the impermanence. The change means impermanence. And therefore, that which is changeless has to be permanent. That which is changeless cannot die. So that is called Brahma. And Swabhavo Dhyatma Muchyate. We saw that in the last class, that we have that feeling of I am so and so. That feeling is called that Adhyatma, Atma. Atma means the self. And that is our nature, so to say. We join with that. That I am rather short, or I am rather tall, or I am stout, or so forth, or I get angry very quickly, or I am having this nature, I am rather lazy, or I am very active, so forth. Now, this is all that I, the feeling of I. Now, that is called the Adhyatma. Therefore, it is called Swabhava. The word Swabhava means it is actually a combination of two words. Swa means own, my own, Swa. And Bhava means existence. So, the existence of I, that is called Swabhava. And then its secondary meanings become that whatever characterizes it, like everything is identified with its characteristics, special features, because of which it is identified as separate from other things. This is a very beautiful point, that where is the difference between, say, Jitendra and Richard sitting here. You will say that, well, you see, their shape is different, size is different, they look very different, although there are similarities, both have two hands, two legs, and two eyes, and so forth. It is so, there are differentiations. Those differentiations become the special characteristics that identify that person. And so, we carry our ID, that this is my identification. This is what I am, characteristics. That differentiate, separate from other things. So that also gets therefore called Swabhava. The separate identity that we, each of us have, each has a separate identity. It is really wonderful, marvelous, something that one must really feel amazed, astonished. These words are used specially in American English with such frequency that their special connotation gets lost. Here everything is wonderful, you know. So, therefore now what to wonder at? It is, so when you really encounter something that one wonders, you are at loss to find the proper word. So, therefore you stretch it. Wonderful! You stretch that and to connote that. But This is how we see that the separateness of things at every level, that is swabhava, the individual distinguishable characteristics of each. So that is called adhyatma. Then these two, the unchanging, all-pervading reality, the world, the Brahman, the I and the Brahman, adhyatma and the Brahma, that is constantly in interaction. So that is then the karma. Visargah karma sadnitah, that changes that take place, that is what is called action. Action means something that is, say, for example, the words are coming from my mouth, going somewhere else, the air is going, that carries the sound, and so forth. The changes, that is the work. So the work is happening, things are displaced from one position to another position. That is how they, even in our high school physics, we were told what is work. Work means the point of action moves, so it gets called as work. So work is being done when the point of action of force moves, then you say that the work gets done. So this movement is the work, the change of place, things shift. Like you were at home or somewhere, came to Vedanta Society, work is done. You thought something means what happened, work, mental work is done. There is a shift of the ideas that then flew, or there was a flow of mental current again shifting. That is the thought, and thus it proceeds. You know, one thing ends, another thing is created or born there. That is the karma. So then Lord turned to that adhibhutam kshuro bhava, the fourth verse, that what is subject to these, our perceptions, whatever we perceive, and what we specify is the elements, different elements that we see. For example, I am seeing a form, hearing the sound, touching something. These are all the interaction with the elements, the material elements. The material elements, they are perceived and interacted with. And what is that? Kshuro bhavah, adhibhutam kshuro bhavah, purushaschadi daivatam, adhiyajnyohamevatra, dehe dehabhritamvara, dehe devutamvara. So, dehe dehabhritam, we'll come to that, and we'll see the first word, adhibhutam kshuro bhavah. Perishable entities are called adhibhuta. Perishable entities means they do not remain. Their perception itself is change. It is very intriguing. In quantum mechanics, this principle was discovered that even perception is change. There is nothing like a perceiver remaining separate from the perceived. There is no such thing. It was in the classical science, it used to be the idea that we are the objective observers. We remain, the observer remains and looks at the object which is separate from the subject. So we are the observers, the thing is observed. In later on, it was shown that this distinction is not correct. When you observe, that very observation also changes the thing. The very process of observation brings about a change. So what you intended to observe is not what you have observed. The process of observation interferes, participates. Therefore, the quantum science uses this word, not observer, very interesting, participator. The observer is not the proper word, it is participation that goes on. The phenomena of observation is the participator and the object that takes place, the two take place, participate in the process of observation. So therefore, this is what is called the changing aspect. Sharo bhavaha. Then purushascha adhidaivatam. Then the cosmic powers, the divine. And we feel that there is something that controls this whole process. Someone that has to be there to control. So that controller is, or the controlling powers, let us say sometimes it is used as singular, sometimes plural, because we are not sure how many control. So all that is called adhidaivatam, where you feel that things are not exactly under your control. And what you think to be under your control also depends on so many factors that are again not under your control. So, adhidaivatam. And then a very beautiful idea, a master stroke really, that is adhiyajna. This is where the human beings come into picture. Otherwise, the other perceptions are common to human beings as well as to other animals. But the speciality of human beings, which brings forth the idea of religion also for human beings, is the idea of right and wrong, a principle that is called conscience, which is not required for the animal behavior, which depends just on likes and dislikes, the natural instinctive life, where the idea of right and wrong doesn't exist. Because of this right and wrong, human beings have certain problems. Many of the modern psychologists therefore say, hey, this, get rid of this conscience that is causing problems in life. Do whatever you like. So there will be no psychological complexes created. But we have that always behind us, right and wrong, that cannot be gotten rid of. When I do something wrong, this philosophy becomes very soothing. Hey, so there is nothing and wrong. Let me get rid of this conscience that is causing problem. But when somebody else will do the same thing to you, then you want that. No, there should be the controlling conscience. Is it right? Is it right? The idea of right and wrong is so ingrained in human awareness that that gives rise to all these institutions like justice. What is the idea of justice? That even those who do not want to be religious, do not have any connection with any kind of theology or religion, they want to be called atheists, but still they want a system of justice in the society. And what this system of justice is based on, there is really no other logical basis for that. There has been a lot of philosophical investigation to provide a logical basis for this idea of justice, right and wrong. How do these feelings arise? And it is a complete total failure to discover any logical, philosophical basis on which you can establish these ideas of right and wrong. The only basis is our divine nature. There is no other basis. Swami Vivekananda has discussed these things at several places. The ideas of religion, ethics and morality. Can a moral behavior be logically established without thinking of God? The answer is no. God or religion is the basis for ethics and morality. You cannot show any other basis. Some philosophers like Mill tried to find out these ideas like what is right, that which does more good to more people, that should be called good. Because every action, one thing is obvious, that every action leads good to some, bad to some. And there is absolutely no action which is good for everybody. It is not possible. So something is done good to somebody, it will do bad to someone. So how to determine what is good action, a just action? Because ethics depends on that. Our actions should be right, moral. How to decide that? Then he tried to give this idea that more good for more people should be called the right action. But this is how do you decide that this is which is more good for more people? You will be your statistics also. It will be something that you personally will be choosing that is convenient to you. It is, and what is the definition of good that you can give? There has been a lot of refutational arguments against this. In fact, it is impossible to find a basis for moral and ethical behavior except for this idea of conscience, the God within us. Therefore, Lord says, Aham Eva, that I alone am the Yajna. What is Yajna? The principle of doing right. We all feel that I should have a right behavior, dutiful behavior. That is signified here as Yajna. The principle in that, why is it called Yajna? Yajna is the idea of sacrifice, giving up, selflessness. That is signified by this word Yajna. We have seen that in the discussions in the chapter 3rd, 4th, and to some extent in 5th too, that Yajna is the development of unselfishness. And do we not see this as the basis of morality, unselfish behavior? So, if we are unselfish, to that extent we become moral. So what is this unselfishness? That is Yajna. That give up something that you have, you feel that other person needs it. Okay, I will push aside my need and give to the other person. The Yajna is not that Yajna, that giving, where you have anyway plenty, something that you are not going to use anyway. In fact, it is a bothersome something in your house. So you want to get rid of it, and so you give to someone that may be useful to that person. That giving is not the ideal Yajna, because there it didn't cost you anything. You didn't feel any pinch. You didn't do. In fact, it helped you to get rid of certain that trash from your home. So that is not really, should not be called a Yajna. Like when we had that house to be demolished, many things were given away. That cannot be called yajna, because they were anyway going to be destroyed, removed. Nothing was going to be just stored. Storing was a problem, in fact. So therefore, getting rid of them cannot be called really yajna. But when the unselfishness plays a role, okay, I really need it. But I see your need to be more intense than my need. Then you give something, that is the unselfish behavior, that is yajna. The intensity of unselfishness determines the how pious that sacrifice is. That sacrifice doesn't depend on a huge, big show or a big ceremony. That lot of banners are put and things are being given. That is not necessarily a sacrifice. We all know the story in Mahabharata that how a mongoose showed that King Yudhishthira the nature of true sacrifice. Yudhishthira, after this Mahabharata war, he had a big sacrifice, and the war was won, so people were being given a lot of gifts. Everybody who came was being given whatever he asked, whatever that person needed, was given without reservation. Come on, take it. And everybody was praising that, oh wow, what a generous king this Yudhishthira is. We have never witnessed in our lives such a great sacrifice. Everything is being distributed without reservation. And people were eating there. There was a lot of big feast was going on. And in that feast, while people were eating, lot of food was being served. Some was also getting therefore scattered on the floor, falling down and all. A mongoose entered there and started rolling in that food. That mongoose was a very special mongoose. Had a very different appearance. Half of its body was golden. See, we don't see mongoose like that. Everybody was therefore looking at that mongoose, and it kept on rolling in that food fallen there. Nothing happened, and people were wondering, what is it? And then that mongoose started talking. Who says that this is a great sacrifice? This is, in fact, no sacrifice at all. All were stunned. We were all praising that this is a great sacrifice. But this mongoose says, no, this is no sacrifice at all. Why so? And then mongoose narrated the story of a sacrifice that were to feed the one guest that had come, a whole family who was starving for days, perished because there was no food. They all offered their portion to this guest, and they all died of starvation that night. The mongoose said, when that guest left, then some particles of that food that he took were lying scattered on the floor. And when he rolled, when that mongoose, it rolled itself on that, some particles stuck to his body, that part became golden. And then, since then he says, I am going everywhere, wherever I hear that there is a great sacrifice going on, I go there and roll in the food particles fallen there. But I haven't found a real sacrifice. I thought at least here I would get that, but here also it was not there. So what is real sacrifice? A complete, total selflessness amounts to real sacrifice. So this is the idea that is Lord says, I alone am that. Whatever therefore at a relative level leads us towards God is the yajna, the sacrifice. That leading to God means the more we shed our ego, I am and this is mine, I and mine, the more we give it up, the closer we come to God. So that is sacrifice. Lord says, I am that. In all of us, the presence of Lord is in this form. Let us feel that, whatever good actions, charitable actions, selfless actions, loving, kind actions that we perform are only because of the presence of God. That signifies the presence of God in us. And therefore, that takes us towards God. All such actions become instruments in taking us towards the Lord. So, this is what is told, that I am the Adhiyajna, that I am this principle of sacrifice in this body, right, palpable. Where am I? Where is God? Well, the one who is asking this question, that person's self is God. So that is the indication of the presence of God in all of us. We are that God is in the form of the conscience, the principle of right and wrong, and that propels us to do something right. When we do right, we feel better. Our conscience feels respected, honored. When we do something wrong, it gets constricted. It is hurt. And so, therefore, our actions which are according to the conscience, they lead us towards our spiritual goal, that is union with God, merging with God, and then this ignorance vanishes. Then those questions that were asked earlier, who am I, what is the world, that confusion about that goes away, all answers become apparent. So this idea is, this human body is for that. And that will be brought out very beautifully in the next verse. It is to be lived for that purpose. The body is going to die. Just let us feel that it is already in the graveyard. It is going there. It is either burnt on the pyre or in those crematoriums. It is burnt or buried. Let us look at it right now in that fashion. It is gone there because it is destined to go there. Like when, suppose you are in the plane, you have boarded the plane to go to, say, some place, California. You already are thinking that, well, what am I going to do after I land there? It is because you are already on the way to California. You are just now about to get out and then start your work there. So, this body is already there. It is marching towards there, certainly is going to reach there. May other things, there may be uncertainty, whether this will happen or this will not happen. Whether it will snow tomorrow or not snow tomorrow. Well, the weather forecasts are there, but sometimes they are not accurate. There is doubts about that. But yes, we are all going to die. There is absolutely no uncertainty about it. So let us feel this pinchingly, that we are going to die. That idea is a great teacher in life. It is a great teacher in life. Therefore, symbolically we can think of this, that in that Kathopanishad, a great Upanishad, the position of teacher is given to the god of death. Death is the teacher. Death is great teacher. Because the things die in that form, when they vanish, that makes us think what really was there. All that I was thinking to be real is gone. Where is it gone? Yesterday morning I got the news that one of my very friendly Swami passed away. I used to be closely associated with him for some time and was not that old. So it was a shock. Oh, what happened? Passed away. Yes, passed away. So gone. So that makes us think, well, was that real? And we become indrawn. We stop in our pursuit after sense pleasures and I and mine. We are otherwise running after I and mine. I am so and so, I must get this, I must get that. When the death presents itself, we stop, introspect. Hey, what am I going to collect with me? What is going to go with me? All that will remain here, all that I call mine, all the nice books that I have collected, they are going to remain with me. All other things which I might have even stolen from somebody, they are going to remain right there. Nothing is going to go with me. It all is going to be just there. There is a nice verse in Sanskrit that what goes with you, that artha grihe tishtanti, whatever the valuable things that you have collected, all the money, your cash and credit cards and all, they remain at home. They do not, when a person dies, they do not follow that person. They remain where they are. All the beautiful furniture in the house, it doesn't go with that fellow. It remains there. Then all the friends and relatives and all, the husband or wife or friends, they also come up to the funeral home. Then after that they don't come further. That is the limit. Smashane mitra bandhavaha. The smashan means the crematorium or whatever, the burial ground. Up to that, the other friends and all come. Then that stops there. Then what goes with you? Your actions, your karma, that goes with you. Your good and bad actions, they have no death. You carry them with you. And then as according to those karmas, you get reborn. According to all those actions that you have performed, those actions, they have created a momentum for your next birth. And accordingly, you get born and again are going through the same torturous cycle of getting buffeted in this world of likes and dislikes and lot of confusion. Terrible friends, is there a liberation from this? Yes, Lord says yes, there is liberation. At the time of death, you have a choice, really speaking. If you are conscious, then there is an exit available. You can take that exit, but you have to work for it. That exit is available to you at the time of giving up this body. But be prepared. If you want to take exit, the exit is right there, and you are in the fast lane going at the speed of 80, and then you can't take that exit. It will be suicidal. You cannot take that exit. So you must be prepared. You know, you when you see that exit coming 2 miles before such and such exit 2 miles away, then you prepare yourself to take the exit accordingly. So we get the signs, not that the death just comes suddenly. We know that the death can come any time as such. Again, the old age brings intimations, and the notices are sent that, well, you cannot now do things as you used to when you were young. The hair start becoming grayer. We don't want to look at it, so we put paint and all that. But the notices are sent that the teeth cannot bite things. So you get the notice that you cannot do all that. The visits to the doctors, and then the taking of the medication for lowering the cholesterol and all that, that stuff is there. All those are notices that, hey, remember, the exit is near. Exit can come. So be prepared for it. In fact, it may come without notice, but at least when you get notice, beware of it. That yes, don't miss it. So next verse says, Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshayah. He who at the time of death remembers me alone and passes out, leaving the body, attains me. Being there is no doubt about this. There is no doubt about this, attains my being. He says that don't get scared. There is an escape. You will attain to my being. You will become identified with the Lord, and so you will not have to go through this cycle of suffering again and again. In Vedanta philosophy, you will see this as the great idea that what should one aspire for? One of the prominent or prominently expressed views about it is that let there be no rebirth, emancipation from this cycle of birth and death. That is what is sought by the religious people, that through our prayers, meditation, what do we seek the grace of God for? Oh Lord, may I never be born again. It is never being born again, a great idea. That means liberation. Your karma is exhausted. Your bondage is finished. Otherwise, you have to be in the prison of the body again. No liberation for you. You have to serve the prison terms. No getting out on parole also. That is this kind of prison, being in the body. See, it is so difficult a prison. And there is an exit. You could have gone out, but you were not prepared for it. So, again, next prison term. The body has changed. Your prison cell has changed. That's all. The prison persists. So, when you become identified with the divine nature, now you are not identified with body. You are Triveni, then not identified with body. You are identified with God. I am Krishna. I am Ramakrishna. I am divine. And then you have no birth. They, whatever you are identified with, you go according to the qualities of that with which you are identified. If I am identified with the body, then, well, whatever happens to body happens to me. If I am identified with God, then whatever happens to God happens to me. God is infinite. I am identified with God. I am infinite. So, that is the great idea that at the time of death, you get an escape route. But when? How? Do we want that? Yes, we all want that. How can we, can it be achieved? That is the living life fruitfully, purposefully, achieving the purpose of life. That, yes, I lived life in such a way, I conducted my life in such a way that when the exit was there, I just took it. I just took it, went out from that exit. How can that happen in life? That he who at the time of death remembers me alone. If you remember God at the time of death, then, wow, I am there, then I become identified with God. Simple job, is it not? Very simple, that I don't have to bother right now. At the time of death, just remember God and that's fine. Our John will think, yeah, what a simple job it is. I don't have to think of God every now and then right now. Let me think of my kids and grandkids and all the friends and all the shoppings and all that I have to do right now. Because I am not right now dying, when the moment of death will come, then I will take, Hari Om Ramakrishna, and then will become liberated, taking the name of God. Excellent idea, is it not? It is so simple. Lord has given such a simple solution. And Lord also tells that this is a general law. I am not telling that it is only with you think of me and you become me. It is a general law. Whatever your disposition at the time of death is, accordingly, you will take your next birth. You think of me, you become me. You think of something else, you become that. Yam yam vapismaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram tam tameveti kaunteya sada tadbhava bhavita. Thinking of whatever object at the time of death, a person leaves the body, attains, O son of Kunti, that very object, being constantly absorbed in its thought. So, if you are thinking of, say, cat at the time of death, what will happen to my cat? Then you become that cat. It is, the law is law. There he says that if you think past your body, when you die, you were thinking of God, you become God. If you were thinking of dog, you become dog. If you were thinking of cat, you become cat. If you were thinking of other things, that you become that thing. And if you were thinking of enjoyment, you become those objects of enjoyment. That is why it is said in Bhagavatam that a beautiful idea is there, that take it as more as an instruction, that it is said that all men in the past lives were women, and those women they were all in their past life were men. Because what happened was the man kept on thinking of woman all the life. So, wanted to become very close and close and close and close to the woman. Can that, as a man you cannot become too close. So the only way to become, come to woman at the closest is to become woman. So that is what you become in your next life. And same with a woman starts, keeps on thinking of man, man, and so it is like that. It is, of course, with gays the situation is same, that, but the object becomes different, that's all. So it is, the idea is that whatever we keep on thinking, that we become. Whatever occupies our mind, that we become. So this is a general law and it is applicable to God also. Vedanta is very democratic in that sense, that it is God also is fitted in the general theme of the things, that no special status. God is telling that no special thing in this. It is whatever is applicable to other things, that is applicable here too, that you think of something, you become that. There are stories that somebody, that story of Jadabharata, the fellow, he was a great sage and was doing his, had renounced everything and was doing a lot of austerities and spiritual practices and suddenly found an orphan deer. The deer mother was attacked by a tiger and it jumped and tried to escape, but the exertion was too much. It was that she was pregnant and then gave birth to a baby deer and died in the in those labors. So this sage thought, oh, who is going to take care of that little deer? Let me do that. And then got so much involved in that. We never know. We think that I am to take care of this. And there the ignorance starts. That God has no job, you know. I have to take care of this. It is, Swamiji says that this is blasphemy. When you feel that you are taking care of something, that is blasphemy. It is very strong words. But if we introspect, they are true. That and one gets then that sage got so involved in it, then had to take the rebirth. Otherwise, a very pious fellow, but took rebirth as a deer. So this is what happens. So Lord says that this is a general rule, but therefore don't think that, okay, now let me think of my wife or husband and children and grandchildren and all that, and I will wait till the time of death. At the time of death, I will push all those things aside and will chant the name of God and I will be liberated. Would have been so nice. Lord cautions against it. Says, therefore, what you should be doing. At the first he told at the time of death, but in the seventh verse now he says, tasmat. Therefore, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanasmara yudhyacha mayyar pita mano buddhi mame vaishyasi asamshayaha. It is, he says that, therefore, remember me at all times and fight with your mind and intellect devoted to me, shall attain me alone. There is no doubt about this. There is the assurance, no doubt about this. But do it all the time. You said it's a simple thing earlier that only at the time of death if I do, that's enough, is it not? Now you are telling me, do it all the time. That is terrible. Why should I do it all the time? You said if I do it at the time of death, that should be enough. Why should I be doing it all the time? Two reasons. Death can catch you any moment. Any moment the death can come to us. And secondly, unless you work for it, it will not, the name of God will not come at the time of death. Whatever is dear to you, that thing will come. Whatever is uppermost in the awareness, whatever you are more concerned with, that will come in the mind at that time, not God. And we shall continue to discuss this. Today's the time is over. It was a great day today, Swami Sivananda's birthday. And this is a great coincidence. His birth anniversary by the lunar calendar and solar calendar have fallen on the same day. 31st December was his the English calendar date, that is today, and also the date by the lunar calendar also has fallen today, and tomorrow is the beginning of the new year. Happy New Year to you all. Today, I think you are all free from all doubts today, and all the questions could be postponed for the next class. It is, because it is already 8:31, and there is a little more program to celebrate this today's night here. So another 15 minutes I will beg of your time. There are some snacks kept there, and there will be some singing also. So that will be in the library. So please, we'll sing there. We'll conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarai Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.